From the studios at the Center for Investigative Reporting in Emeryville, California, I'm Molly Wood, filling in for Ben Johnson. This is Marketplace Tech. Despite some skepticism from investors, the electric panel maker SolarCity and the electric car maker Tesla will merge in a $2.6 billion deal. Here's where the skepticism comes from. Tesla CEO Elon Musk is the largest shareholder in both companies. He's the chair of both. His cousins founded SolarCity, and Tesla's co-founder is on SolarCity's board. Both companies also have tons of debt, and even the combined company, according to Musk, might have to raise more money. Now, Tesla reports earnings tomorrow, but ahead of that, we turn to Eric Gordon, a professor of law and business at the University of Michigan. Hi, Eric.
Hello, Molly.
So I feel like we should start with the most basic question here. Is this legal?
You know, it's fishy, but like a lot of fishy things, they can make it legal. So the idea is that if the deal is approved by supposedly independent directors of both boards, then they probably can do it. Molly, you'll catch the question in my voice on independence because you can play golf with Musk for a dozen years and still be independent.
Is anything good about this SolarCity Tesla deal for either shareholders or the businesses in question?
You look at companies that are loaded up with debt, like these companies are, like boats loaded with cargo. You have SolarCity. It's a little dinghy. It's way overloaded with debt. So it's like a little dinghy overloaded with cargo. Then you have Tesla. It's maybe a little bigger. It's a rowboat. It's also loaded with debt. Somehow, if you tie them together, Musk thinks they're all better off. Now, if I were in the dinghy, I might be okay with it. But if I was in the Tesla boat, why do I want to be tied to this overloaded dinghy that nobody knows if it can stay afloat?
Musk says, though, that it's a no-brainer. What's his rationale?
He thinks things like, well, we'll open stores, which will be one-stop shops for people who want to buy an electric car, solar cell for the roof of their house, and a battery. I'm not sure there are quite so many consumers. It's just not clear how these companies fit together other than that they are both alternative kinds of energy powertrain things.
But Eric, this isn't the first time that we've seen tech companies branch out into less intuitive directions. I'm thinking of Google and all its different efforts. Is it common for tech companies in particular to make these sort of unexpected turns?
Yeah, tech companies are their own thing. They're often run by semi-crazy people, and they often go in directions you wouldn't have thought of, and sometimes those are big hits. It's also a very incestuous world where they're interlocked by friendship, they're interlocked by having worked together, they're interlocked by having the same VCs.
That's Eric Gordon, professor of law and business at the University of Michigan. Thanks a lot, Eric.
Thanks, Molly.
Social media companies are walking a finer line than ever before. Terrorist attacks and shootings have all raised thorny questions about the role of Facebook, Twitter, and others, and the role they may inadvertently play as havens for terrorist propaganda. Now comes word that several big tech companies have been experimenting with posting videos aimed at deterring would-be extremists. Marketplace's Rima Kreis reports.
For 15 years, Tony McAleer considered himself a white supremacist.
You're going to join this great noble cause to save the white race from extinction.
Now, McAleer runs Life After Hate, a nonprofit. Last year, he made four videos that were funded by Facebook, Twitter, and Google to motivate people to leave hate groups. They were targeted to users based on terms like white power. Other videos were targeted to young Muslims based on words like Sharia.
Do not be confused by what the extremists say, that you must reject the new world.
The videos were part of a month-long study by the Institute for Strategic Dialogue to help gauge the effectiveness of counter-narratives online. Clay Calvert teaches communications at the University of Florida. He says the videos come with a risk.
You may take offense by that and saying, whoa, why did I get this? I'm not trying to join this group. I'm just trying to learn more.
It's unclear just how effective the videos were, but after they ran, McAleer with Life After Hate says eight people approached his group asking for help. I'm Rima Kreis for Marketplace.
Facebook Facebook says it will fight a notice from the IRS suggesting that it might owe as much as $5 billion in back taxes related to a subsidiary that it set up in Ireland mostly to avoid taxes. So we thought we'd take a closer look at these business arrangements. The short version is that in 2010, Facebook transferred some so-called intangible assets to a company called Facebook Ireland Holdings Limited. And the Irish Facebook collects revenues as Facebook in the rest of the world.
This is entirely an artificial kind of a construct.
That's Edward Kleinbard, law and business professor at USC. He says it's all technically legal, but it leads to disputes about how much those royalties should be. The IRS says Facebook wildly understated the value of the assets that it transferred to the Irish company. But for tech companies who trade in these so-called intangibles that are already hard to value, this corporate structure is more and more common. Google, Microsoft, Apple, Oracle, just a couple of tech companies doing business this way.
Tech firms have all sort of taught each other the same tax avoidance technologies, so they all employ similar offshore structures.
It may all sound a little evil, but economist Kimberly Clausing at Reed College says the companies have an obvious goal in mind.
Yeah, I think their argument is that their big responsibility is to their shareholders, not to anybody else. If there's a deduction or a tax break that's being offered, you know, to me, even if I don't think it's a good tax break or a good tax deduction, you know, I might be tempted to take it.
Some estimates say loopholes like these cost the U.S. something like $90 billion a year. And Clausing says that really only Congress can close them. That's something that has been discussed many times, but so far hasn't happened. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.